Welcome to the Orthodontics and Interview Podcast, where Farouk brings you closer to the experts in orthodontics so we can hear their story and learn from their experiences. With your host, Farouk Ahmed.
Welcome to this episode of Orthodontics in Interview. It's my absolute pleasure to give you guys Roxana Pertru. Hi, Roxana, how are you doing?
Hi, very good. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
My absolute pleasure. I'm so glad that you're here for this interview. So I want to tell you guys a bit about Roxana and how I met her. So around 2 years ago at the Simply Ortho meeting in Porto, we met. And Roxana gave an incredible lecture. She spoke about orthodontics, she spoke about prosthodontics, and she spoke about mini screws. And what I loved about her presentation was that she switched between languages. She went from orthodontics to prosthodontics to biomechanics and back over to looking at restorative management. And in that process, she also described the occlusal TMD management for patients. And this is something what I wanted to get her on for to discuss the topic of TMD. She spoke about using both spin therapy, occlusal reduction, occlusal addition, and also not treating certain patients. So Roxana, thank you very much for joining us today. I want to give the audience a bit of background about you. So Roxana Pertru is based over in Romania. She's in private practice in Clinica Ortho Concept in Timișoara. Her practice is limited to orthodontics. Now, she did all of her training, both dental and orthodontics, from the University of Dentistry in Timișoara. Her areas of interest are TMD, mini screws, but actually I think she's one of those experts who goes across the field of orthodontics. Interdisciplinary care is what she's published on in both JCO and the APOS. She teaches courses. She's taught 23 times, as I counted fastidiously last night. She's taught across the world. In the UK, she's come to talk, South Africa, Korea, and her focus tends to be TMD therapy, looking at treatment planning, mini screws, and also working with colleagues as well. She's collaborated with some of the greats. She's worked with Johnny Barber and also Itamar Freelander on their courses. So she's very much working with the best within our field. Now, I will give you guys disclosure for myself. I have had the fortune to go on Roxana's course in Romania last year. You guys can see my review about it on the Orthodontics in Review blog. So Roxana, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and for your invitation. I follow your podcasts and your blogs. I always listen to them and enjoy them very much. So it's a big honor for me to be here today.
Thank you so much. That means so much to me, Roxana. It really does. So Roxana, I want to get down to the first question, really. What led you to have an interest in the field of TMD? How did that come about in your practice?
Okay. So actually, I don't know if you know this about me, but the first 4 or 5 years as an orthodontist, I did almost only Invisalign cases and incognito cases. Okay. And I had not that I didn't have any interest. I didn't know anything about the TMJ, muscles, occlusion. I think I was very fortunate that nothing happened to those patients. I'm very, very grateful for my education now with the liners and with incognito. But as the years passed by, I felt I was lacking many, many things, many informations. Maybe I also didn't put the diagnosis right all the time and complete, correct. And then things started to change. So I said, okay, it's up until now. I have to dig more into this, what's happening with the occlusion, because I started to have many questions. I also started to work with very good prosthodontists who asked me all kind of questions, again, about TMD, muscles, occlusion at the end of treatment. And that I was like, what are they saying? What are they asking me? I said, okay, so I have to stop and take everything from the beginning. So, and this was 2015. So nine years ago. Then I looked at where can I go and study about TMD, anatomy, occlusion. And actually at that time, there were few orthodontic philosophies who studied that, but more prosthodontists. And I've heard also an orthodontist say, and then Oxon and Dawson also, that every orthodontic treatment is actually a full mouth rehabilitation that we are doing to our patient. So the question is, if we are changing everything, because when we do an orthodontic treatment, we switch, we move the teeth. It's like taking the green bar and taking everything from the enamel and then recreating it. And the question is, okay, if you modify completely the occlusion of the patient, what are your guidelines? Where do you go? Where do you place them? How do you know it's right? How do you know that the patient is feeling good? And this is, if we go back in history, and I did this, I went back to the 50s, the 60s, and I started to read what was published, and I started to read orthodontics, but also prosthodontists. So I went to the, from the gnathology to the Dawson, the Penke, the bioesthetics group, Spear. So everything up until now, to see how are they looking at the patient? How are they seeing him? How are they diagnosing him? And actually, this is what helped me a lot. You spoke about my multi-languages switching to prosthodontist. This was what gave me the insight and the knowledge to do so and to see the patient in this way, and to think that each time I'm treating a patient, I will change his entire occlusion, and I want to know where do I have to go with this patient so that he will be fine at the end. And if the patient will need some kind of restorative afterwards, because in many, many, many situations, orthodontists alone cannot solve the problems of the patient. In my situation, I have most of my patients are adult patients. So adult patients come with missing teeth, come with old crowns, old fillings, with abraded teeth. And it's not enough that we place the teeth in the correct position in the bone, but it's important that the patient's morphology is restored so that the teeth can then take up their function again. So this is why this interdisciplinary approach is so important, especially for those patients.
And then my question leading on from that, Roxana, is that you mentioned about the changes to the occlusion that orthodontics cause. So does orthodontics itself, which aspects of orthodontics would cause TMD in your opinion? What is it that we do that can create that?
So then the next question would be, what causes TMD? I think the first, what we could possibly create would be a lack of correct diagnosis. So if we don't look correctly at the patient, if we don't take into consideration how the muscles function in that specific moment, how the TMJ looks and functions at the beginning of the treatment, and of course to have a certain goal. So our goal whenever we treat patients is like Oxon is saying, we want to have a stable and a healthy TMJ, and in the same time we want all the teeth to touch. So this is the orthopedic stability that he's talking about. So this is our goal as orthodontists, and the same goal is for the prosthodontist. Where it can go wrong is when we misdiagnose, when we don't see where the patient suffers from the beginning. For example, the most extreme case is if I would go into treatment with a patient with an active erosion of the condyle, whose disc is totally displaced without recapturing it. And now interposed between the condyle and the fossa is the retrodiscal tissue that has not healed and adapted in a pseudodisc, and I'm starting treatment now. So I wouldn't want to do this.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. And just leading on from there, so you've got your patient, they've come in, you've diagnosed them, they've got active TMD, you've been thorough with your diagnosis. How is your orthodontics going to manage their TMD?
Okay, so I want to take a step back from your question, because TMD is a big, big, big word. And I know you know this, how I'm seeing the patients. This is not, I haven't invented this. I have heard this in the Dawson Academy, and also Frank Spear uses it. And I like it very, very much. So the way they are looking at patients, just to diagnose them, is they want to see if the patient has a healthy TMJ, healthy muscles, relaxed muscles, they don't have any tension, the patient is easy, is very easy to be guided, the TMJ accepts loading. This would be a good patient to go into treatment with him without doing anything. Just go into treatment with orthodontics. And they are using the traffic light principle. So you have the traffic light with the green, yellow, and red. This one would be a green patient. So he's good to go into treatment, into orthodontic treatment or restorative or whatever he needs. The yellow patient is explained as the occlusal muscle disease patient, like Dawson is explaining them. The typical patient is the one who has interferences, premature contact, signs of occlusal trauma, so we can see fractures, cracks in the tooth, maybe hypermobility of the tooth, hypersensitivity. His muscles are very, very strained and contracted. And if you try to guide that patient, he's like a rock. You cannot do anything to him. So this would be a yellow patient. And the problem here, so he doesn't have any issues in the intraarticular space. Maybe he has a click. Maybe he has a lateral pole that is anteriorly displaced. But it's not pathological. It's not a problem. But his issues are with the muscles. They are so tight that you cannot guide the patient. And our problem here is we cannot see the first contact point. We don't know what makes the bite unstable. So for me, this is okay. So now, what am I treating? Where is the tooth that is making the bite unstable so that I know how and where to position it? So this is the yellow patient. And the red patient is the patient who already has these problems in the intracapsular space. So he has the medial pole displacement. He may have an active erosion of the condyle. He has the retrodiscal tissue that is now in between the fossa and the condyle. The load testing is very painful. And that is the patient who needs, who we need to help with the occlusal splint to get a reduced loading of the TMJ and just to wait for the recortication of the condyle before we can go into treatment.
So you're not using orthodontics as your modality to treat the TMD. You're diagnosing and then you're managing the TMD.
Yes, yes.
Before orthodontics.
Yes, before orthodontics. And only after. So my first objective is to diagnose correctly. And I want to see if the patient is yellow or if the patient is red. And then to see what I have do to get these patients from these red and yellow to the green color so that they are ready to go into treatment. And only after that, I will go into treatment with them.
Great. So I wanted to pick up on a statement there about looking at the first dental occlusion and achieving dental stability. Now, I was reading up before this interview, and there was a systematic review by Manfredini. And I just want to quote two lines from his paper, if it's okay. The first thing that he mentioned was the findings from his systematic review were consistent towards a lack of clinical relevant association between TMD and the dental occlusion, and centric relation, maximum intercuspation, and non-working side interferences. And his conclusion from his paper was that clinicians are encouraged to abandon the old nathological paradigm in TMD practice, essentially stating that the occlusion should not be relevant to this disease. What do you think about the statements from that review?
Yes, I know the review and I've given it some thoughts. I think it's very difficult for the papers and for the reviews. There are so many factors to take into consideration. And actually, I have seen some patients who have interferences, who have shifts, and they don't have any pain in the joint. They don't have any pain in the muscle. And now I will switch it because now this is also a question. Okay, so what is the etiology of TMD? Yeah. And we have more factors here. We might have an occlusal problem, but I also think there are many, many, many also other things. It's depending on the lifestyle of the patient. It's depending on the stress he has. And I think it's, if you see it like a balloon, like this balloon, and all the stress factors are in this balloon, and this balloon is the patient, let's say it. And I think some of them are suffering in certain ways, but that also depends on the adaptability of the patient. So if the body's capacity to adapt to a certain type of problem,
yes,
is above the stress factor, I think he will be okay. But yeah, the more things, the more stress factors are here in this bubble, and they might be bigger than the ability of the patients to adapt, then something might be wrong. Something might go wrong.
I'm with you. So what I'm hearing is that the occlusion itself is not the be-all and end-all of it, but it depends on the variety of factors that are there. And this is one factor to control potentially for that patient as other factors. Now, it's really interesting you mentioned that these other factors. So this was news to me, and it was in the AJODO 2 years ago where Kasad Adami spoke about the biopsychosocial model of TMD. So never come across the terminology before, all new stuff. What is the biopsychosocial model? Is that what you're describing as other factors?
Yes. So it's biology, psychology, and social factors that we have to take into consideration. And I will tell you a short story, if we have the time, of a patient of mine. So I have a young woman, a very, very smart young woman. When she first came to see me, she was in the last year of medical university. She came with pain in the muscles, slightly pain in the TMJ, but basically she was the yellow type of patient. So very, very, very contracted, very stiff. I wanted to go into treatment with her, orthodontics, but first I had to relax the muscles. But because she was so tensed and everything in the neck, in the back, and she did not sleep very well. She was very stressed at school. So we had to enlarge our spectrum of tools. So yes, I worked with her on a certain type of splint, but she also did physiotherapy. And she also started to move and to do some things for her just to relax and take it more easy. And the pain started to go away. So it was in several months we went there and muscles started to relax. I really was able to see what was making her bite unstable. And then we went into orthodontic treatment. Everything was fine. Now she is ready with the orthodontic treatment. She also did some selective grinding and some prosthetic work, minor prosthetic work. When I was ready with her, she had no pain anymore. She was easy to be guided. She did not clench anymore. And then I think after after 8 or 10 months after treatment, then I see her again in the program for the day. And I asked my colleague, well, why does she come back? Well, she's having pain. She's having pain. She called and she's again in pain with the muscles and with the neck. And I said, oh, okay, let's see her.
And this is after treatment, right? This
after
is
after treatment. After treatment.
Stabilization, after the occlusal treatment.
Yes. Okay. Yes, after. And so her occlusion was as good as I could do for her. And also the prosthodontist did a great job. So she came back. And I said, so what happened to you? And I saw her, her eyes were in tears and she was like this, contracted. What happened? Said, you know, I have some problems. And basically her mother got cancer and she was, she had more siblings, but she was the only one who was taking care of her. And she had to go with her mother to chemotherapy, to the hospital. And so everything was on her shoulders and literally you could see her like this bent down. And I said, what, are you in pain? Yes, everything hurts. My muscles, I started again to grind the teeth and here it hurts and my back is hurting. So this was a very interesting thing happening because everything in the occlusion was okay. Everything. I checked and I couldn't do it better. I didn't know how to do it better in my opinion. So everything was stable and she also had an occlusal spleen. But because of the stress, because of the immense stress she had in her life, she was at a certain point where everything was hurting.
Yeah, it was that. It's the psychosocial. The bio has no application. Yes. It's the psychosocial and biopsychosocial which adapted for the patient. And that's really interesting because that ties in. So it's interesting we're having this conversation. So TMD has its management, but actually it ties in with Kadasamy's paper from the AJDO where they spoke about once TMD is present, TMD cures cannot be assumed. Would you agree with that statement?
I have to say here something because my aim when treating patients is to give them the most stable occlusion that I can. I might not be able to influence everything in their life. I might not be able to influence how they are sleeping, what they are eating, the amount of stress they are having, but I can take that part, that small part, the occlusion, and treat it as best as I can in an orthopedical stable way. And this is my aim to do. In the whole problem list of the patient, the part that I'm responsible of, I want to do it as best as I can and not to leave the patient, if I'm treating the patient, with interferences, with premature contacts. And this is it. This is my philosophy. And I have also something more to say. I also heard it, I don't know exactly where. I think also the Dawson group, when they look at patients, they see the links that the patient has in his system. So the system has the TMJ, the muscles, occlusion, perio. And the question is, what is the weakest link of each patient? Because, and now again, to the first example I gave you, I see patients who are having shifts between CR and intercuspid position, who have interferences, but they don't have any TMD problem. They don't have any muscle problem, but their teeth are abraded. So maybe their weakest link are the teeth and not the TMJ and the muscles. And then I could see a patient with a small, small shift, a very small shift, but with a huge pain in the TMJ and with a huge erosion on the condyle. And for me, the weakest link of that patient is the TMD. So a question that we need to ask ourselves is, what is the weakest link of the patient? How does the patient suffer? Because not every patient is alike. We are not treating numbers or, You know, we are treating human beings and they come with a whole baggage and with a whole adaptation system.
Yes. So if I come back to the example, you mentioned how you treated the patient, you achieved ideal occlusion, and then you provided them with an occlusal splint as well. So my question to you is, if you've achieved CR is equal to CO and you've got no non-working side interferences, what is the why are you providing a splint for the patient after you've achieved the ideal occlusion for the patient?
Yes. So I was talking about these yellow patients and red patients, right? In the beginning. For the... So after the treatment, after the orthodontic treatment or the orthodontic and prosthetic treatment, for the red flag patients who had previously erosion of the condyle, I will give them after treatment a full cover occlusal splint. Because if you will see the condyle in time of a patient who had an active erosion, the condyle will change. The condyle's morphology will change. So we will have an osteophyte, and that will change in time. So because the condyle is adapting, is constantly adapting. And every adaptation, every change in the morphology will have a change in the occlusion. And it's important for us to know that, because when we finish a case, that case will still have some changes in the occlusion because the system is still adapting and is still changing. And what I'm doing with the splint is I'm still giving the best contact and the best protection I can to sustain these changes, to go with the same pace with the TMJ.
Yeah, so you're not able to achieve... So again, just to be frank, you're not able to achieve long-term ideal occlusion because the occlusion is changing, because it's dynamic. Yet providing the patient with a splint allows you to still achieve stability with the occlusion, but then you'll have to keep monitoring the splint. Is that right?
I'm keep monitoring. Yes, I'm keep monitoring it. So even if I finish the patient with a perfect occlusion, I'm still giving the patient this splint, and I'm seeing the patient every 6 months just to check the occlusion, maybe do some small calibrations on the splint and the occlusion. And from what I've seen, there still are some changes. I don't think we can get a patient a certain occlusion for a lifetime, for every type of patient, because it depends how the patient went into treatment and what was his problem in the beginning. So this is the protocol for the red flag patients. And for the yellow flag patients, if we think to the heavy bruxers, I don't think we, with a perfect occlusion, can cure bruxers, because there are so many factors and the nervous system works differently. Maybe there are times in the life of the patient when he doesn't brux anymore. But again, if stress factors come, if he doesn't get enough sleep, if he's stressed, if anything happens or changes in the life of the patient, then he might get again to this bruxism. So for that type of patient, again, I will give him an occlusal splint after I'm finishing the treatment, more for protection.
Okay, I'm with you. I understand what you've described there about the occlusion being dynamic and what the patient's etiology was of their TMD, which is part of the diagnosis. Now, evidence. So just last year, a few months ago, there was this large systematic review published in the BMJ, which is Rapid Recommendations on TMD and this treatment of it. I just want to read a quotation from it. So it's you, systematic review, December 2023. Conditions recommended against removable occlusal splints with or without intervention. Their strong recommendations were the use of behavioral therapy for patients, postural exercises, but they recommended strongly against the use of permanent occlusal splints and recommended conditionally against removable occlusal splints as treatment for TMD. So I hear what you're describing. You're describing the principles of an occlusion, which is dynamic. But we've got the contrasting opinion here from the academics, where they're suggesting, actually, occlusive splints, removable or permanent, offer no treatment advantage to patients. If anything, they're actively recommending against it. So how do we square that circle, Roxana, as somebody who is in the field of TMD and understands the science better than I? How do we understand what is coming out in this piece of literature?
It's, you know, if you want to prove a point, you will find the articles to prove that point, and again, for a whole other concept. So it's very complicated with this research, and again, there are so many factors, and I will give you my way of doing things. What he was saying in this article, I'm pro going to therapy for movement and for integrating as many options as many treatment modalities as possible. Now, again, I will come to this red flag and yellow patient, yellow and red. Yes. With the splint, I'm not curing the TMD. With a splint, I'm reducing the symptoms. I try to relax the muscles for the yellow patient to see the starting point in the treatment that I have to do, and then treat the occlusion to the best situation I can, to this orthopedic stability. And for the red flag patient, I will try to unload the joint to reduce the compression inside the capsule so that actually the body can heal itself. Wait for that period of time until we have again cortical bone on the condyle, and then have a stable joint from where we can start treatment. Maybe if you see this review as, if you give a patient a splint, it will not cure the TMD. No, you won't cure the TMD. You have certain objectives you do with a splint, and then you correct the occlusion and give the patient the best occlusion you can. So I would switch the point of view that I'm seeing here.
That's amazing. And this is why we need experts to help also interpret literature, because otherwise it can be quite condemning just to read that book. That's really insightful of you to give that opinion. I want to move more towards the education side. So there's been numerous discussions about education within TMD, and now it's really been very much formalized that we just don't know enough about it, or it's not taught well enough. So we've got the National Academy of Medicine on TMD, which stated that the need for significant change at every level of education management and interdisciplinary cooperation in this field to make progress. How do you think we can advance education within the field of TMD?
I think it goes back to the universities. And I don't want to go too much into this detail, into this topic, because it's sensitive, but I think it has to start there. And what I'm hearing from many and from people who are coming to my courses on TMJ is that they get out of training programs, but they are still lacking the basics, the anatomy, the physiology. It's like this black hole around the TMJ and everything. And also because it's so controversial.
Yes, yes. People are very passionate about
yes.
And I admire your passion, but people can be very polarized and sit on one side or just completely dismissive on the other. But it's really interesting how the institutions are now recommending this interdisciplinary education as part of the way forwards. And I think, as you've described, it's probably starting from the grassroots, starting from the very beginning in our dental education. What do you see? So we've got the education side, but what do you see going forwards in the management of TMD? What do you see as solutions in the future? Is there a horizon where we can get to where we're all managing our TMD patients better?
Well, I think and an idea came up while you were talking, because for me, a big confusion was because there are so many different philosophies. And each one or each group has its certain philosophy. And it's just like that or nothing like, or nothing at all. And actually, it's not about that. It's just learning the basics, learning everything, how everything functions, anatomy, physiology, what can go wrong. First, diagnosis. How can we diagnose? How can we validate everything? And then having as many tools as possible, basically learning what every splint will do, when do we want to relax the muscles, how can we do that, when we want more stability for the joint, when we want to unload the joint, what can we do? So all these types of treatment, it would be amazing to learn when do we need and how to pick a certain splint based on the diagnosis of the patient and not based on a philosophy. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. That's really insightful. It's almost like, to make it more simplistic, is talking about brackets. Which bracket do you choose?
Yes.
Do you choose a prescription appropriate for the patient, or do you choose a prescription that you always choose, or the one that follows this philosophy as you describe it? That's really insightful. It's really good. Really good. Roxana, I could talk to you all day, but I know you actually have other things to do, unlike myself. So I wanted to come to conclude the interview about asking you what one piece of advice would you give to the orthodontist and the audience who are listening?
One piece of advice. Actually, more small pieces. Focus on the diagnosis. Learn the basics of diagnosis. That would be the first one. Then I would very much go for the education of the patient. Because we haven't talked about this up until now, but the role of the patient in the treatment is very, very important. And our job on one side is to treat the patient, but on the same time is to educate the patient, as good as we can about the problems he's having, about the possible implications, about the possible factors. As I was talking to you, there are also stress factors and the lifestyle that the patient is having. And we want to work with these patients who want to be educated and who want to take responsibility for their part of the treatment.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, guys. I'll draw this interview to close. Roxana, thank you so much for joining me as my guest on Orthodontics in Interview. Guys, if you're interested in following up more about Roxana, she's got her stability course on TMD and splints, which you can attend. It's now in English as well. And thank you so much, Roxana. I do hope to see you again soon. Thank you so much.
Me too. Thank you. It was my pleasure.